Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty has the day off today. On Monday, opening arguments begin in the trial of Bridget Ann Kelly and Bill Barone, once close allies of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Kelly and Barone allegedly orchestrated 4 days of colossal gridlock involving cars, school buses, and ambulances at the George Washington Bridge 3 years ago as payback for a Democratic mayor who wouldn't support Christie's bid for re-election. While Christie hasn't been implicated, his name is almost certain to come up during proceedings. It's a scandal involving many moving parts and people, and this hour we take a close look. And we're taking calls at 888-477-9499. Are you following Bridgegate? If you live in Jersey, has this shaped your opinion, if at all, of the Christie administration? Matt Katz is a reporter for WNYC and author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Hi, Matt.
Good morning.
Great to have you back.
Thanks.
And Joe Hernandez is a reporter for WHYY and will be in Newark, New Jersey, along with Matt, covering the trial. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, Mary.
So let's begin at the beginning. It's September 9th, 2013, the first day of school for many kids in the Fort Lee area. And the Port Authority, without notifying Fort Lee officials, shuts down two of three local access lanes to the George Washington Bridge. And very quickly, mayhem ensues. Matt?
That's right. These are the lanes that go toward the busiest bridge in the world, the George Washington Bridge, and they're local access lanes. So people from the town of Fort Lee and from surrounding towns use these lanes to get around the main approach to the bridge. And it helps to, spread out the traffic a bit. These group of people at the Port Authority are alleged to have conspired to have done this. And they specifically told those who were in the know on this and were involved in it, literally moving the cones to close the lanes, not to say anything to anybody. The term was radio silence.
It was a surprise to everybody in Fort Lee.
Absolutely right. Exactly right. And when there were people who were driving stuck in traffic and asking the Port Authority cops why this was happening, they were told, you got to call your mayor. But the mayor himself had no idea about this and, in fact, was calling the all of his contacts at the Port Authority and in the Christie administration for five mornings in a row and couldn't get an answer. He was sending text messages. He was sending emails. He was saying public safety is threatened. What am I supposed to do here? And nobody would call back. And public safety was threatened. There were ambulance drivers who literally had to get out of their vehicles and run to the scene of incidents because they couldn't get around the traffic.
So, Joe Hernandez, the official story was what? The lane closings were what?
A traffic study. The official story was that it was a traffic study started by the Port Authority, and they wanted to kind of reevaluate these three local lanes that came from Fort Lee. As you can imagine, Fort Lee is right at the foot of the bridge, has a lot of commuters. It's a town of, I think, about 35,000 people, plus, you know, commuters coming from other areas. It was the first day of school, and it was very busy. So doing this on that day, doing this alleged traffic study, obviously had these catastrophic kind of consequences for traffic. Later, we found out through testimony and emails and documents that no such traffic study existed. There was never one. This was the cover story, and that's kind of how this all unfolded.
Do we have a sense of how long people had to sit in traffic? How long were those kids on the school buses?
We know that people sat in traffic for as long as 3 or 4 hours. The school buses, they had left a little bit earlier. School buses start going before 7 a.m., so they might not have been in traffic as long, but we know that this was the first week of school. The federal government alleges that they did this in order to maximize pain by doing it on the first day of school. So I just can imagine kindergartners thinking about that, their first day of school all summer. I have a four-year-old. She's already thinking about kindergarten, and she's a year out. And she's, you know, she's going to walk to school. But if you're taking a bus and you're a four-year-old, that's a big moment. You're getting on the big yellow school bus. And then these kindergartners all the way up through high school were stuck on a bus for at least an hour or two. And there were people late to school. Teachers were late. Principals were late. The superintendent himself was late, the superintendent of school. So it caused a lot of problems all around.
So back to the timeline. So Fort Lee Mayor Mark Sokolich is being met with radio silence from the Port Authority. What finally happened at the Port Authority to get this mess to end, the lanes to reopen?
the New York side of the Port Authority. The Port Authority is this bi-state agency that functions as dysfunctionally as you can imagine because it's run by two governors of two states that often have competing interests. And the New York side of the Port Authority is run by a guy named Pat Foy. And once he got wind of it, he reopened the lanes.
He's saying, what's going on here? A traffic study? Question mark. And why is this happening?
He didn't know about the traffic study, okay. Even though he runs the place. He didn't understand why this was happening. And once he reopened the lanes, the New Jersey side, the Christie appointees, were furious. And one of Christie's confidants said, Patrick Foy is, quote, playing in traffic, and they said he'd be punished. But, you know, this all then got exposed, and Pat Foy ended up testifying before the legislature against the New Jersey side of the Port Authority. And it really like opened these very harsh feelings that are between the two states when it comes to the operatives who work at the Port Authority.
We're going to get to retribution more a little bit later in the hour. But let's kind of back up a bit to how we got there. 2013 is an election year. Governor Christie is running for re-election, and apparently with an eye toward an eventual run for the White House, he wants to score a big victory, a huge victory, and maybe even surpass what Tom Kaine had done a number of years back.
And the way to score that victory in the minds of some of Christie's political operatives was to get endorsements from Democratic mayors. And so they would go out and kind of court these Democratic mayors and say, look, if Governor Christie, who is a Republican in maybe the bluest state, you know, in the union, can get all these Democrats on board, what does that say about him? He's, you know, that is convincing to voters, they thought. So
we know how many Democratic mayors he wanted on his side, approximately?
He got about 80-some-odd, and most of the campaign events during that election season were centered around a press conference saying, look at this Democratic mayor who's now endorsing me. I mean, this was the thrust of the campaign. There was no doubt he was going to win re-election. There was very little doubt. It was right after Sandy. He was extremely popular, but he wanted to win, like Joe said, by massive margins.
And so then he runs into to Mark Sokolich, who is the mayor of Fort Lee.
And Mark says, what? And he says, I'm not going to endorse the governor, which is kind of the great irony. One of the great ironies in this whole event is that it all started because Mark Sokolich didn't endorse the governor. They wanted to show how well-respected and well-liked Governor Christie is, and Mark Sokolich said, no, I'm not going to endorse the governor, and then this happened. And then as a result of this happening, as a result of Bridgegate, Governor Christie's approval ratings have continued on a downward slope. Mm-hmm. And so in an effort to show how liked he was, what the end result is that now he's not very well-liked by the people in New Jersey.
Yeah. So Sokolich says, I'm not going to support you, Chris Christie. And then there's an infamous email from Christie's deputy chief of staff at the time, Bridget Ann Kelly.
Do the honors.
Time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee. Yeah. It doesn't get much more explicit than that.
And who was that email sent to?
That was sent to David Wildstein, who is perhaps the most colorful of all the characters in the Bridgegate saga. He was a former political blogger, totally anonymous. He ran this site called Politicker NJ, was known also as Politics NJ. The people who worked for him didn't know who he was, and neither did his legions of sources around the state. They would IM him, instant message him tips, and this website became a go-to for politicos in New Jersey, and he ended up selling the site to Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's now son-in-law. And he then was hired by Chris Christie to go to the Port Authority. He had no resume. There was no job opening, but he was hired for this big position at the Port Authority. And his job, as we now know, was to do politics at the Port Authority. He was Christie's political operative in this agency, and he had this background of having connections to all these politicos in the state because he had been there, like, you know, he had taken information from them for the last half dozen years.
Yeah, so fast forward a couple of years, and Wildstein turns what? He's the star witness for the prosecution.
Right,
now.
Right. He pleads guilty.
What happened there? Yeah, he pleaded guilty. Now, what led to that?
Well, so just to go back a bit, the time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee email goes to David Wildstein. David Wildstein is kind of the second the deputy to Bill Baroni, who is second in command at the Port Authority. He's the New Jersey appointee at the Port Authority. Patrick Foy is the New York appointee. And so David Wildstein, prosecutors say in this indictment, and Bill Baroni kind of go through the process at the Port Authority of closing all these lanes. A lot happens after that. The lanes get closed. People are very upset. Investigations start to be opened into what happened here. The New Jersey legislature, eventually the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the David Wildstein pleads guilty to the U.S. Attorney's Office to federal charges and is now expected to testify in the trials of Baroni, who he reported to at the Port Authority, and Bridget Ann Kelly, who was a deputy chief of staff to Christie at the time.
And meantime, some more stuff is coming out. I mean, Kelly does not come off very well in the follow-up to time for some traffic, you know, troubles. Wildstein texts her about children stuck on buses, and Matt Katz, her response is what?
Is it wrong? Oh, they're the children. There were two responses. One was they're the children of Buono voters, was one of them, about Barbara Buono, Christie's opponent in the election. And then there's another email that there's another exchange where she says, is it wrong that I'm smiling, referring to people stuck in traffic?
And this is sure to come out in the trial.
Oh, for sure.
Both Kelly and Baroni have pleaded not guilty.
That's correct.
Right.
And so, they both may testify.
So they may testify. We don't know that they're going to testify.
We expect them
to
testify. Yeah.
So, of course, people want to know about any involvement on Chris Christie's part. He says he wasn't involved.
He hasn't been charged. He says he wasn't involved and that he didn't know about it. Whether he'll be called to testify or not is still unclear. But he said that he would testify if he's subpoenaed, right?
That's right.
He said he would. So he says he wasn't involved, and then he makes a joke about traffic cones.
Right. He said
to Matt.
That's right. this is before we saw the smoking gun time for some traffic problems in Furley email.
Okay.
This
okay.
is during the three and a half month period that I call the cover up, because it was evident that many other people in the administration, not named in the indictment, were aware that something shady had gone down. And during this cover-up period, people are starting to ask questions, Democrats and reporters. And toward the end of that, he had a press conference. It was right after he won re-election. And I said, Governor, did you have anything to do with closing the lanes of the George Washington Bridge in order to punish a mayor who didn't endorse you? And he mocked me for a couple of minutes and said, that's ridiculous. Oh, yeah, I was out there moving the cones.
Oh, so you asked that question.
Yeah.
Wearing overalls, right?
He said he was wearing overalls and a hat. Right. You cannot be serious with that question. It'll go on my tombstone, I think. Because that moment ended up being replayed over and over and over again after the smoking gun came out a month later.
All right, more on the Bridgegate trial in just a moment here on Radio Times. Matt Katz is a reporter for WNYC and author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Joe Hernandez is a reporter here at WHYY, and he will be in Newark, New Jersey Monday morning as opening arguments begin, along with Matt. 888-477-9499 is the number if you'd like to get into the conversation. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty Moskowain has the day off today. We are talking about the Bridgegate trial. Opening arguments are set for Monday. Joe Hernandez is in studio with us. He is a reporter for WHYY who will be covering the trial, along with Matt Katz, who reports for WNYC. And Matt is also author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. So we were talking about Governor Christie and his reaction to the scandal as it was beginning to unfold. His brash style has served him well at times, but what was the sense of reaction to how he handled the situation here? Matt, you were kind of right in the front lines there.
Sure. I mean, he came out the day after this smoking gun email came out, the time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, and he did a 1 hour and 50 minute press conference, which is unbelievably long and extensive for any politician.
Sure.
And he answered every question in a room that was packed at the State House, and he never raised his voice. He was contrite. He said he knew nothing about this, but he felt like he had been betrayed by those who worked for him. He said that Bridget Kelly, who wrote that email, was fired. He also cut ties with Bill Stepien, who was not charged in this scheme, but was the running his gubernatorial campaign at the time and was supposed to be running his presidential campaign. It was a very powerful moment for him, and also was counterintuitive in that he didn't yell at any reporters, which is something he always does. He didn't make fun of reporters like he had done to me the previous month. And he came across quite well. It was the best he could do under the circumstances. But after that, once a whole other series of scandals started to come out as a result of this Bridgegate probe, and as reporters from around the country started digging into his administration, as Democratic legislators started getting thousands of pages of documents about how he basically had a political operation going on both at the Port Authority and in the governor's office, his approval rating started to sink. His approach to dealing with the press started to get more caustic, and this whole tough guy tell it like it is shtick that had served him so well in that first term seemed to connect with this idea of retribution in the minds of many New Jerseyans, and it just didn't seem that cute anymore to people. Yeah. It seemed like he was a bully to a lot of voters.
Okay, we've got calls coming into 888-477-9499. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. One more quick question before we get to the calls. It seems like such a long time ago, but Christie was a hugely popular governor at one point, and seen as a man who could reach across the aisle, work with Democratic Senate President Steve Sweeney, was take charge after Hurricane Sandy. Joe, you alluded to this earlier in the show. Bridgegate was the beginning of the end of that?
Well, I mean, if you look at what's been happening in New Jersey recently since Governor Christie has kind of been back since his presidential campaign, there have been some issues where he hasn't been able to make headway with Democratic lawmakers in a way that he had been able to previously, namely on the pension deal that he worked out in his first term.
Sure.
The Transportation Trust Fund kind of problem that's been happening. It's not funded, and road projects are kind of at a standstill in New Jersey. That's been unfolding over weeks and months recently, and although Christie's been in negotiations with Democratic leaders in the state legislature, there's still no deal, and you know, workers aren't in the streets working, projects aren't getting done, and Christie is kind of unable to bring the two sides together on this.
So the sense of camaraderie seems to have just completely dissipated.
Right.
That existed several years ago. Okay. Let's get to the phones. Ken in, I should say Mort, I'm sorry, in Delaware. Welcome to Radio Times. Hi, Mort.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Well, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to intersect a few points. First of all, this individual that concocted this scheme, the first thing, if there was no reason for them to do it, they interfered with interstate commerce.
Hmm. Hey, Mort, let me jump in because we only have a few moments. I'm reading on the screen that you were stuck in traffic on that bridge.
I have stuck on this bridge numerous times. I got more time on that bridge than some people been alive.
Okay. Yeah, and then when you have an artificial situation like that, I'm sure it's that much worse. So what is your question, Mort?
All I'm saying is, if they did this illegally, they interfere with interstate commerce, because the bridge is part of Interstate 95. I think they should throw the book at them. If they want a preferable juror, I would sit on the jury when they come in front of me. Mm. Trust me.
More thank you.
The whole big time.
Thank you so much for the call to Radio Time. So do we know what if there are convictions, what are the ramifications? What happens?
They can face several years in prison, each of them, each of Bill Baroni and Bridget Kelly. They were charged with 9 felony counts, and one of them, Joe brought the indictment with us into the studio because they're a little bit complicated, but there's fraud and conspiracy. Those are the counts. And the first one is conspiracy to obtain by fraud, knowingly convert and intentionally misapply property of an organization receiving federal benefits. This is something of an unusual charge, but they're essentially charged with misusing public property, and that public property being roads. And they're also charged with interfering with the right to travel.
Right. To Matt's point and to Mort's
yes.
point,
mm-hmm.
Another one of the charges is depriving the citizens of their, I think it's worded like their civil right to travel freely across state lines.
You can hear from the caller how much traffic really infuriates people.
Yeah.
And in fact, in jury selection this past week, they were asking people if they take the bridge, because the defense attorneys didn't want people who take the bridge every day to go to work in New York City, because they would experience the misery of being stuck in traffic. I mean, you can think about – I mean, we heard all different kinds of stories. We heard about people late for job interviews and didn't get the job, people who had been out of work for many months and then couldn't get a job.
You were there. You were at jury selection.
I was at jury selection, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. Over 200 people to start. Mm-hmm. Did the process go quickly? And who ended up on the jury? Can you give us a sense of that?
Sure. It took several days. It started with more than 250 people. That was the pool. They first had to answer a very extensive questionnaire about their use of the GW Bridge, about their feelings about Chris Christie, about whether they knew any of these players involved. And then they were brought in for questioning by the judge and the attorneys from the federal government and from the defense. And it was we ended up with a jury of 7 women, 5 men. They have all different kinds of careers, or some who are retired. What's perhaps most interesting were there were people who acknowledged that they dislike Chris Christie.
Yeah.
There was one woman who lives in Christie's hometown. She said she doesn't like him or Republicans very much. She said her grandmother, she always talks to her grandmother about him because her grandmother hates him, loathes him, I think was the word she used. And
Goodness.
Yet she was selected for the jury. Both sides were okay with that.
Isn't that a question that normally gets you struck as a juror?
I think it goes to where this case is going, and it indicates that neither side thinks that hating Chris Christie is a problem for them and maybe could be useful in the jury room. And I think that also means that Chris Christie is going to shadow these proceedings and not in a positive way.
Yeah. Are there any smoking guns here? I mean, we don't know for sure, but is there a sense that something might come out of this trial that will reach higher in the Christie administration than it has already?
I mean, I guess the major smoking gun that's come out so far is that time for traffic problems in Fort Lee email. There's been a lot of evidence. I mean, a lot of this trial so far has been under seal, and a lot of it, I think, we'll learn in the course of the trial. A lot of evidence, the witness lists. There's also the list of unindicted co-conspirators.
We did get one piece of evidence a few weeks ago that the defense attorneys released in a court filing, in which this was during the cover-up period. Christie is doing another one of these press conferences where he's saying this is a traffic study and none of my people are involved. While he's saying that, a woman who worked for him and worked directly under Bridget Kelly sends a text message to a colleague that says the governor is flat out lying.
Now, that's
right
Christina
now.
Renna.
That's right.
Right. And so do you have that committed to memory, Matt?
The governor is flat out lying.
But as she goes on to say, there's a little bit of back and forth between her and it's Bill Stepien, right, who's the campaign manager.
Right. I think she says he's lying about nobody having knowledge and nobody include, and she includes Stepien, the campaign manager, having knowledge of the lane closures.
Yeah. So and so what impact could this possibly have on the trial? I mean, really, it's he said, she said.
Well, Christie denied that he was lying, right?
Yeah.
Christie's denied that he was lying. And this was deals with the cover-up, too. That's the part that is intriguing, but is not necessarily – is not criminal as far as the indictment goes. I mean, what the indictment deals with is what happened before and the people that were involved in actually closing the lanes, not the people who were involved in covering it up. And what the trial could yield is more information about who was involved in covering it up, and that certainly could reach higher up in the administration. And that would be fodder for the media, and it would be of interest to citizens of New Jersey, but it wouldn't necessarily get, you know, Christie in trouble with the law.
Yeah, well, and this kind of speaks to an email from Daniel who asks, any chance either defendant will implicate Christie himself, and how could he not know? We don't know, obviously, until we get there, but that's what we're talking about, whether, you know, something could come out of this trial.
David Wildstein.
Get to the top.
David Wildstein, who was pleaded guilty, has said that he is, through his lawyer, has said that he told Christie about the lane closures while they were happening, when the men were standing together at a Ground Zero ceremony on the anniversary of 9/11.
And there's a photograph.
And there's a photograph of them hanging out laughing.
And Wildstein's attorney says evidence exists that Christie knew about the lane
closures. He is the star witness.
Right.
Okay. Let's get to the phones once again. Ken in Lansdale, welcome to Radio Times. How are you, Ken?
Good morning. Yeah, Christie's big press conference, he predicated it on his claim that he did not know that Kelly was involved until yesterday when the papers reported it. But that claim has got to be preposterous because, if we remember, Wildstein resigned over this a month earlier. Wildstein is Christie's man. Now, are we to really believe that when Wildstein tendered his resignation to Christie, he didn't tell him, oh, by the way, you should know it was not my idea. Your deputy chief of staff told me to do it. I mean, you had, so at the very least, Christie had to have known, at least for a month earlier than he claims to have known, and was covering for Kelly.
Ken, thanks so much for the call. Yeah, well, we're going to toss that over to Matt Cass.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because there was a time period in mid-December, and Ken is right, Wildstein did resign. But Wildstein never spoke to Christie when he was resigning. He spoke to a lot of Christie's inner circle, though. There is a ton of evidence of phone calls and emails between Wildstein and Christie's top advisors during the two or three days when it was decided that Wildstein had to resign. And Wildstein, of course, you know, the resignation statement, he said he was just moving on, and it was framed in such a way that this was just time for him to move on. But there was clearly other things happening behind the scenes, and I think that is going to be a key part of what is discussed in this trial, is why he was pushed out and how that happened.
So many moving parts. So, Matt, you alluded to this a little bit earlier. The big development last week was the decision by a federal appeals court to block a judge's order that a list of unindicted co-conspirators could be released to the public. So for the moment, the identities of these people, the unindicted co-conspirators, will remain secret. What does this mean to news organizations seeking release of the names?
So this is a list of people that has been put together by the U.S. Attorney's Office of people who allegedly knew about the scheme but were not necessarily involved in making it happen. And a group of news organizations – I don't know, is WNYC on that suit? A group of news organizations filed a motion to unseal this list, basically to make it public, to see who these unindicted co-conspirators might be. There was some these could be public officials in Governor Christie's office, sure, political officials. And so far, that list has not been made public. A John Doe, an anonymous person who's on the list, went in court and said, I don't want this to be public. It could harm my reputation. Yeah. U.S. Attorney Paul Fishman, who actually is at the top of the U.S. Attorney's office that made the list, agrees. And so for the time being, that's not public.
Yeah. So this is a classic journalistic conundrum, and I'd like to ask this of both of you. You want to get as much information out as possible, but whoever John Doe is probably has a point because it's hard to erase the shadow once it's cast. How do you grapple with that, Matt, as a journalist?
I think about the fact that this John Doe is almost definitely a public was or is a public official. And this was an action that took place with a public resource and impacted untold thousands of people. And in that, for that reason, I think we think the list should be revealed. I know this person and these other people on the list weren't indicted, but that does not mean that they shouldn't face scrutiny for actions that the federal government believes they participated in.
Joe?
I mean, if I kind of agree with Matt, and I think if these are public officials, they're being paid with taxpayer dollars, I think New Jerseyans would have an interest in knowing if they knew about what was going on, to Matt's point. I mean, this is taxpayer money paying their salaries, funding all the resources on the bridge, and you know, whether the names get published or not is one thing, but whether or not this list is should be available to the public is kind of a different thing, and I think people would have an interest.
We may see some names in the trial. Like this might come out naturally as the proceedings go, and that is actually part of what the appellate court said, that, you know, this might be released eventually anyway.
If they are co-conspirators, might we see more charges down the road?
You know, the U.S. attorney has left open that possibility, but I kind of find it hard to believe that this case is going to go much beyond this trial.
Okay. Let's get to a comment from John in Downingtown. Downington, he asks, if Christie does end up on the stand, can't he plead the fifth and then everything just goes away?
and we're done. We can all go home.
That's right. Matt, what do you say?
No, he could certainly plead the fifth, and he may very well do that. If he's called, the other tact he could take would be to be extraordinarily charming and woo the jury. But either way, I don't think this case hinges on his testimony. The testimony of David Wildstein, who has pleaded guilty and is cooperating with the feds, is much more significant because Wildstein knows what went down and how well he's able to portray that, and how much the jury believes about what he says is really going to determine where this case goes.
Right. I mean, as Matt knows well, the governor is not one to shrink from
a
challenge in public and dealing with the public. So maybe he'll plead the fifth if he's called, but you know.
Yeah, a shrinking violet he is not. Okay, so we're taking calls at 888-477-9499. I'm curious, if you live in New Jersey, is Bridgegate on the radar, or is it primarily us here in the media talking about it? Just curious, 888-477-9499, or you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. In studio with us today, Matt Katz, a reporter for WNYC and author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Also, Joe Hernandez, a reporter for WHYY, who is going to be covering the trial, the Bridgegate trial in Newark, New Jersey for us. And stay with us. There's more of Radio Times just ahead. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty Moscawain has the day off today, and we are focusing on the Bridgegate trial. Opening arguments begin on Monday, and then earlier in the show, the topic of retribution came up. So let's take a closer look at that. This practice apparently not new in the Christie administration. Back to a Fort Lee mayor, Mark Sokolich, not the first to feel the administration's alleged displeasure at not playing the game. Tell us a bit about Steve Fulop, who is the Democratic mayor of Jersey City. We might be getting into the weeds a little bit, but worth telling the story.
So Steve Fulop is kind of seen as a rising star in New Jersey Democratic politics. He's a younger guy. He's the Democratic mayor of Jersey City, which is a second largest city in New Jersey. And Steve Fulop also did not endorse Christie for re-election in 2013, and this was noted by Christie's political operation. And so the governor and several of the governor's officials, including Barone at the Port Authority, had meetings set up with Steve Fulop. And after Steve Fulop decided not to endorse the governor, all of those meetings were canceled. And
in a single morning— His secretary got all the calls canceling the meetings in a single morning.
So it's one fell swoop.
There was an indication that the message that a message was being sent.
Right. But of course, the administration and Christie says that these meetings were just canceled. I wasn't trying to give the mayor of Jersey City any special treatment.
He acknowledges that dropping the meetings was his idea. Christie, correct?
But he says it was because he didn't want to be seen as currying favor with Steve Fulop because he thought it could damage his relationship with Steve Sweeney, who is the Senate president
and a Democrat. Yeah.
And both of these men are almost definitely running against each other for governor next year.
Ah. Well, then you have Dawn Zimmer, who's the Democratic mayor of Hoboken, who says the city was denied Sandy relief money because she refused to approve a development project that Christie wanted. Did anything ever come out of that?
No, the feds investigated that, but there was were no indictments. However, it turned out due to some reporting by a public radio reporter who's worked for both of our stations, Scott Gurian, that in fact Hoboken was did lose out on Sandy money that it should have gotten. And the administration claimed it was a clerical mistake and they got the money they were supposed to get. But, you know, that still hangs out there.
So there's a sense that if you don't play the game, you're going to feel the pain.
Correct. Right. And there's also carrots, too, that the administration uses. They were using the Port Authority, not only runs the bridges and tunnels, but also has the control over Ground Zero. And they were using burnt steel from the remains of the World Trade Center. And Port Authority operatives were giving it to Christie administration officials. And those officials were then bringing it out to local towns so they can create their own little 9/11 memorials in little towns throughout North Jersey. And while these political operatives for the administration were out there giving burnt steel to local mayors, they were also saying, oh, hey, you know what? What about maybe possibly, you know, endorsing the governor in November? So there were carrots and sticks.
So, but all right. So, but some would argue this is just politics. As a matter of fact, one defense attorney in the Bridgegate case says the case is criminalizing normal politics. So, Joe, business as usual?
Well, some people in New Jersey might say so, and the governor has said and acknowledged, of course, there's politics in the governor's office in Trenton. I mean, these are politicians, right? You know, whether this goes beyond that and whether this is taxpayer money funding the salaries of people who are supposed to be working government jobs and, in fact, instead are doing politics work on during government hours. I think that's kind of the allegation here. And to Matt's earlier point, I mean, Governor Christie in his first term had that kind of brash attitude, but it was, you know, it was always, of course, I'm from New Jersey, I'm going to speak plainly, but everything's above board. We're going to do everything right. And after kind of all of this has come out, it's kind of confirmed that for many people, that attitude and that way of doing politics are kind of inextricable from each other, that maybe you can't have one and not the other.
All right. Let's get to the calls. Howard in Northeast Philly, welcome to Radio Times. What's your question or comment?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I did have a question for the two guests. I know that they were both in favor of revealing the list of unindicted co-conspirators. And, you know, the one of the people on the list that objected to think, hey, this could really ruin my reputation. That said, typically when somebody's indicted or arrested or something, there's typically some sort of due process involved, the intervention of a neutral third party. And it seems to me anyway that to put somebody's name on a list when all you have is some government agent say so that we think they should have been indicted, but they weren't, even with the grand jury. Sounds pretty fair, unfair rather. And in this internet world, I mean, your name's on the internet. You're pretty much hurt for life with these things. That's my question and
good
comment.
Point. Thanks, Howard. We appreciate the call to Radio Times. Matt Katz, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, that's a fair point, and it echoes what attorneys were saying in court. And it also echoes what the U.S. attorney himself was arguing in keeping this list secret, that it would set a bad precedent for other cases. And these people did not have the opportunity to have defense counsel to defend themselves against these charges. It's totally legitimate. I guess I side more on the along the lines of what one of the judges wrote in the decision, that information wants to be free. And if there is information that's been concluded by a government agency to be true, then I want to see that information.
All right, let's get to some more comments from listeners. We've got an email from a New Jersey listener who says, this is one of the biggest wastes of the public's money. How many years are we going to beat this dead horse? Christie is not involved. Move on with your lives. An email from Bobby. To lots of us, Christie is New Jersey's embarrassment. We dislike him on so many levels and issues. Bridgegate is just one more. And from Stu, Christie running for president after Bridgegate is the new definition of chutzpah. And that was okay with his party and people actually voted for him. So we're hearing a kind of a real mix of reaction from some of the folks who are writing and calling in.
Right, for sure. And there's that mix of reactions in New Jersey, as we see. I mean, I guess I would point to the governor's approval ratings. So I think a majority of people who are answering these polls are not happy with the job he's doing in New Jersey. And two of the big factors, as the callers mentioned, our Bridgegate and the governor's decision to run for president. And after he dropped out of the presidential race, his decision to endorse Donald Trump and become the head of his transition team also played into that as well. So
where are his ratings these days? Do we know?
High 20s, I think, 26, 27%, which is really pretty poor considering he won with 60% of the vote just before Bridgegate.
Mm-hmm. All right. More calls coming in to 888-477-9499. Mike, you're up next on Radio Times. Mike's in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Two quick questions, please. The first is that if David Wildstein testifies directly that he told the governor that the traffic stoppage was occurring, can the governor be indicted or charged? And the second, I guess it's really more of a question, comment, is that I'm just wondering whether Christie has not already been charged, on the basis of quote-unquote professional courtesy, since he is the former U.S. attorney prior to Paul Fishman.
All right. Thanks for the call to Radio Times, Mike. So is there any courtesy being extended to Christie because of his resume?
Yeah, that's certainly been suggested. I mean, there are people in the U.S. Attorney's Office who he worked with and hired. I mean, this case centers around this office that he ran for 7 years before he became governor. So that's been alleged. The U.S. attorney, though, is a Barack Obama appointee. He has said that nobody whom Christie worked closely with is involved in this investigation. And I think if Wildstein has information, as the caller alluded to, that would lead to Christie's indictment, then it would have been used already, and Christie would have been indicted. So, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, you want to weigh in?
Well, I think Wildstein's attorney has. I mean, Wildstein has said, and this has come out, that he told the governor at that September 11th event in 2013. As I understand it, it's up to the discretion of the U.S. attorney whether they think that they can win the case, and perhaps that factored into the decision. But
all right. Well, Christie has said the trial is not going to affect his work as governor day to day. It's not going to affect what he does for Donald Trump. We kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. And as you mentioned, he's head of Trump's transition team. He's quoted as saying the public doesn't really care. What is your sense if he got dragged into this in a significant way during the trial? What is your sense of how the Trump campaign might react?
It's funny. Donald Trump last December said Christie knew about it. Christie was starting to build some momentum in the presidential race. He was starting to nip at Trump's heels a little bit. He was starting to criticize Trump's various policies as absurd and ridiculous. And Trump got up on stage one night last December and said, oh, that bridge thing with Chris Christie, he knew about it. He totally knew about it.
He said, what, there's a 1% chance he didn't know
exactly
about it.
Exactly right, 1% chance. So how this would affect a Trump campaign, I don't necessarily think it
or
really
Christie's,
would.
Or Christie's position within the Trump campaign.
You know, Christie's position in the Trump campaign is a behind-the-scenes role right now.
Yeah.
He's involved with the transition team. He's interviewing prospective members of the administration. He's developing policy. That's mostly what he's doing.
But his aspirations are said to be higher.
For sure.
So, and
for sure.
And just this week, Christie said that he thinks Bridgegate played into Donald Trump's decision not to pick him for vice president.
He's been doing some more TV interviews in the last couple of weeks. He was on MSNBC this week. He'll be on Fox News this weekend. And I think once this trial gets going, if Christie's name gets bandied about a bunch, which it probably will, then you'll just see him not as much of an out front surrogate during that time period. But his role in the campaign, his much more significant role in the campaign, is behind the scenes and being one of the few people that seems to actually have Donald Trump's ear and can kind of convince him of things and how to operate in certain ways.
All right, let's get to Raymond in Woodbury, New Jersey. Welcome to Radio Times. Raymond?
Yes. The point I would like to make is that he was formerly involved in law enforcement, right?
Yeah. As a prosecutor.
Federal prosecutor, yep.
Yeah. So if I was governor and I had a temper like he supposedly does, while this traffic jam is going on, I would have had the people responsible in my office, and I would have been hollering at them and stopped it immediately. And I don't understand why he didn't investigate this so thoroughly that it came to light long before someone else found out about it. I think he should have done his job and referred the people responsible themselves for prosecution. And his administration should have been involved in doing that.
We appreciate the call to Radio Times, Raymond. We're running a little short on time, and I do want to give our guests a chance to weigh in.
Well, after Bridgegate, the New Jersey legislature opened up an investigation and called a lot of Christie officials in to testify. And one of the big criticisms, to the caller's point, was that there was kind of a lack of curiosity in the office about people, you know, a step below Christie, kind of not asking questions, not trying to delve deep into this to figure out who actually was responsible for it.
And not only was Christie himself in law enforcement, but most of the people who were closest to him were also in law enforcement. He brought over all these former federal prosecutors, his chief of staff, his chief counsel, and that's a great point. The curious lack of curiosity is something that continues to be quite curious, and it's something I've asked Christie about many times and never really fully gotten an answer that I'm totally satisfied with.
All right, and I did want to bring up something, Matt, that you had brought up during one of the breaks. There are some items that are missing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just real quick. We learned in recent months due to court filings that although Christie said he gave his cell phones and his email accounts over to federal investigators, that's not entirely true. We learned that an email account he shared with his wife that went from the account known as Chris and Mary Pat Christie was not actually turned over to federal investigators. And even though he did government business and received at least one Bridgegate-related email on that account, that was never turned over. And there was a cell phone. He said he gave his cell phone to federal authorities. There was a personal cell phone he used during the lane closures. In fact, he had given that to his attorneys who hired a taxpayer-funded forensics firm to see if there was anything to know in the cell phone that might be relevant as far as they were concerned. And then the cell phone was then given to his personal lawyer for safekeeping. So the federal government never had an opportunity to search that phone.
You need a scorecard.
The bottom line is Christie, who has criticized Hillary Clinton for not being totally transparent with her emails, he also has not been totally transparent with his emails.
One more quick question. Bill Stepien, his former campaign manager, who was let go in all of this after some developments happened. He's now working for the Trump campaign as a national field director. Any irony there?
Well, Stepien and Christie are both working for the same guy now, so
that's right.
Yeah. So, how long do you think this this trial will last?
The judge says 6 weeks at least.
6 weeks. Yeah.
It's going to be a long haul. There's going to be a lot of witnesses, and tough for the jury too. Yeah. 6 weeks every day, 5 days a week.
So, and Monday morning, opening arguments. You got your coffee ready, Joe Hernandez?
Your game plan? Set the alarm.
Yeah, we have to be there around 7 a.m. to wait online because we expect for day one there's going to be quite the media scrum.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us for Radio Times. And, of course, we'll be updating the story as it goes along. So, Joe Hernandez, it was a pleasure.
Thanks,
Mary. Joining us for Radio Times. He's a reporter for WHYY and will be in Newark, New Jersey Monday morning as the opening arguments begin. Also, Matt Katz, is always great to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Mary.
Matt is a reporter for WNYC and author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Is there another book on the way, Matt?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out what happens at trial.
All right. And by the way, don't forget to visit our Facebook page. Head to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you'll find our podcasts there as well. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and this is Radio Times.